The first thing that I always tell people that I learned is that you have to find your own way. Following the footsteps of anyone else doesn't work. And to your point, not only because you're unique, but the industry is unique whenever you insert yourself into it. The second thing that I know to be true that is still true today is you have to have mentors, and not only have mentors, but you have to listen to what they think you should be trying and exploring, because oftentimes other people see things in you that can lead to great opportunities that your ego may ignore.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Creating the 4% Podcast, real life stories from Fit Pros. I'm your host, Maria Costello. Stories of motivation, discipline, failure, and success from your favorite fitness instructors. A podcast about how to create an impactful and meaningful class, which amounts to 4% of a person's day. Made with sweat, for Fit Pros, by Fit Pros. Thanks for listening, and let's get this episode started. All right, welcome back, everybody. She's a sought-after speaker, author, and thought leader in the area of business development and strategic innovation. Shannon Fable has spent more than two decades helping brands such as Anytime Fitness, Schwinn, Power Systems, Ace, Silver Sneakers, Fit for Mom, Intellive Video, and Bosu, just to name a few. She has also served as chair of the Ace Board of Directors, co-founded and successfully sold Group X Pro, and advises companies in strategic partnerships and business development. In addition to her many accomplishments, Shannon was awarded the 2013 IDEA and 2006 ACE Instructor of the Year Awards. As a Book Yourself Solid licensed professional, she helps Fit Pros navigate the industry to build scalable and sustainable businesses. She is a mom, a wife, the ultimate Fit Pro, and a collector of Florida Gator memorabilia. It is an honor to welcome Shannon Fable to the Creating the 4% Podcast. Shannon, welcome.
Hi, thank you so much, Maria. Appreciate you having me on.
So excited that you are here. As we were saying before in our pre-chat, I am a big fan and have heard you on a couple of podcasts and have heard about your career here and there through mutual people that know you or know me or know of you. And so I'm so excited that you're here and I can't wait to pick your brain on a million things. But before we go into that, I would love for you to introduce yourself to everyone and tell us how your fitness journey began, how you became a Fit Pro, and a little bit about your background.
Okay, I will keep it brief because it's been a long one. And I always say it's a long and winding road. And I literally have no idea how I ended up where I am. I was a ballerina turned cheerleader. There's a story there. But cheerleading led me to the University of Florida, where I cheered on a scholarship, had an academic scholarship as well. That exposed me to fitness and training. But it also, this is the dark side of the story, exposed me to disordered eating and having a really bad relationship with exercise. So once I graduated, I ended up being a gymnastics coach and running an all-star cheerleading program at a gym in Atlanta. I moved to Atlanta and had to find a way to exercise because it wasn't a part of my daily life anymore. And that was in the early 90s, or mid-90s. So heyday of sports and health clubs. And I found one that was open till 10. That was a big deal back then, if it was open till 10. And they had a Stetinol. That's the prerequisite. I ended up spending for the first time ever money on a gym membership and fell in love with driving by there on my way home from work at about 9 o'clock, jumping on the Stetinol, plugging in my Walkman, tuning into the FM station and watching my favorite show on the tiny ass TV. And along the way, I stumbled by the group fitness studio, which was on the way out, and peeked in. And like many of the people listening to your podcast probably did the same thing, where you look in and you go, what's the magic that's happening in there? There's music and there's sweaty people and they're dancing. That looks like a grapevine. So I weaseled my way into a class, started in the back row like most of us do. And it was everything that was right in the world. There was music, there was dancing, there were costumes. And I just knew that I could do that. I didn't know enough to know that you had to actually go through some process to do that. I just thought I could do that thing. So I'm not kidding when I say I had a tape in my bag and I was just ready for the girl not to show up because I had a routine and I was ready. That never happened. But luckily, where I was, Melissa Lane, some of the folks on your podcast may know Melissa Lane of Melissa Lane. She presented a lot of shows, SCW, a ton. She was the group fitness manager for the 7 health clubs where I was a member. And she ran a program, I want to say it was like twice a year. And it was a Saturday, Sunday, back to back, where she would take you through all of the anatomy, physiology, exercise science, and prepare you to take the written test for ACE or AFA. She was preparing you for the test. And then there was a practical component the following weekend to teach you how to create choreography, deliver choreography, find the top of the phrase. Went through her program. And funny enough, another girl in the program with me was Jennifer Renfro, who is the senior VP of Crunch Fitness, group fitness programming for the franchise. And so she was an accountant by day and took group fitness by night. And so we were in this group together. Melissa then selects people to go into an internship afterwards. So for 6 weeks, we would go in shadow and start learning how to teach. About 2 weeks into that, she hired both Jen and I to start teaching because she was like, you guys are good, let's go. And I'm not kidding when I tell you the first class, I love Melissa, but she threw me to the wolves. And we joke about this to this day. She's like, I got a job for you. Go to Buckhead. And Buckhead was like the flagship club, like the hot, cool, urban downtown Atlanta. And she's like, I've got a step class I need you to teach, like 8 a.m. on a Tuesday. So I show up and I'm getting my stuff together in my first class. I'm so nervous, got all my choreography in my notebook and my flashcards. Another girl walks in. She's like, who are you? I'm like, I'm Shannon. I'm here to teach class. Who are you? She's like, I'm the teacher. I'm like, hi. So long story short, this girl, Melissa, was making a point. Anyway, and just me. So what does the girl do? Like your worst nightmare. She's like, fine, you teach. And she just plopped herself in the front row and took my class. So let's just say, I mean, nothing could have been worse than that first class experience, right? So the beloved teacher, this is my very first class. So that was my step into it. The rest literally is history. I ended up being a group fitness coordinator and there's so much to unpack from there, but that's how I got started. It was an accident, but a happy accident.
Oh my gosh, step class. I was just talking to someone about a step. I guess it is still a step, even though we don't use it in the way that we used to in step class. But we had one at F45 and one of my clients actually turned to me during the exercise and she said, do you remember step class? I'm like, of course I do. That was all the rage at Bally's Total Fitness. I loved it. Interesting that you brought that up as your first class experience. But oh, yes. Wow. So like you said, a lot to unpack between there and where you are now. So take me through in a little bit more detail how you were able to grow that fitness career starting from group fitness. I think that, and we can delve into it a little bit more after we hear your personal story of how that kind of happened for you because it was a different time and things were different. I think a lot of people don't see fitness, even us fit pros in it right now as a career that's both viable in terms of sustainability, longevity, and then also to ascend, right? To different positions of management, leadership that goes beyond the class or the studio. So tell us a little bit about how that happened for you.
Yeah. And I'm going to start with the 30,000 foot view because I know that's what your listeners want to know. It's like, how to do it? How can I do it? The first thing that I always tell people that I learned is that you have to find your own way. Following the footsteps of anyone else doesn't work. And to your point, not only because you're unique, but the industry is unique whenever you insert yourself into it. So I'm going to tell you my story, but the time that I came into this industry was a time of great growth and prosperity in group fitness. And I was along for the ride. I literally was in the right place at the right time. The second thing that I know to be true that is still true today is you have to have mentors and not only have mentors, but you have to listen to what they think you should be trying and exploring because oftentimes other people see things in you that can lead to great opportunities that your ego may ignore. And I'll explain that when I get there. But those are the two big, like if we could sum it up in two statements, those would be it. Find your own way, find mentors and allow them to be a really good mirror and get your ego out of it. So like I said, I was super fortunate to stumble into the health club that I did, the one that I joined. And I don't like to use the word luck. I feel like luck is not it. It was just a good happenstance opportunity. But Melissa teaching me how to teach was an amazing foundation. She taught me all the most important things, but it was also a clear, more linear path to doing whatever you want to do. And you learned how to teach step. You didn't have 72 specialty formats. You didn't have a decision between pre-choreography and doing your own or a boutique or a club. It was, you taught step and maybe you still taught high-low. So it was binary. The other really neat thing about that gym in particular, it was owned by Rich Boggs, who is the owner of the step company. He, along with Jen Miller, single-handedly distributed the step around the world. And very closely after I started teaching and became a group fitness coordinator and was learning, becoming a good teacher, Rich Boggs, the step company, became the distributor for Les Mills, the very first distributor in the US. So our club had a unique opportunity to launch Body Pump. We were one of the first clubs in the entire US that had Body Pump. And I was one of the first 10 or so instructors that got taught how to teach Body Pump. So, I mean, looking back at it now, it's like that will never happen again. And that was such a turning point in our industry. It was the first of its kind, really like specialty format, first foray into pre-choreography, which is probably your listeners, a lot of them, that's all they know, whether it's an F45 or an Orange Theory or UJM or any of it, like everything is pre-formatted. You know, everyone has proprietary programming. Even clubs have proprietary programming. So super fortunate. And it taught me so much about teaching. But from becoming a Body Pump instructor and launching Body Pump, this was when I finally was like, oh, there are other jobs in this industry that are not just my $400 a month I'm making coordinating subs, because I was still working in retail real estate by day and doing the group fitness in the morning, at lunchtime, at night, on the weekend, like everyone else. So I had the opportunity to take a full-time position with the step company as, I don't remember what the title was, but I was essentially a training coordinator. So I was training Body Pump on the weekends, going out and teaching people how to teach Body Pump. And then I was organizing the operations of that behind the scenes with some other folks. So coordinating with the directors at the gyms and when are the training dates and what trainer is going and that whole nine yards. That started to expose me to the industry at large. And so that would be another learning, I think, or takeaway from everyone is, you know, sometimes we're just looking at the opportunities that exist inside of our ecosystem. Had I not worked at the step company and gone to a fitness trade show, I never would have known that there are equipment manufacturers and education companies and there are events and there. So I got exposed to a lot. I eventually became the trade show coordinator at the step company. So the next thing I would tell people, I started networking and networking a lot, not networking with the intention to jump ship or go anywhere else, but there was just something that I knew inherently about, okay, get to know these people, pick their brain in a way that's, you know, not obtrusive or obnoxious, but, you know, start building your Rolodex, build your network. So eventually when I left the step company, simultaneously, our clubs got bought by Crunch. So this was another like, wow, how could you have been in a more perfect place? And back in the early 2000s, Crunch was, and they still are, I mean, group fitness heaven. And anything that was unique happening in group fitness was happening at Crunch. So our clubs got bought by Crunch. I got fired as a coordinator and thought my life was over. And Donna Cyrus, who is the national head of group fitness, like she kept being like, will you just talk to me for a second? I didn't like firing you is the greatest gift I'm ever going to give you. So this is where it was someone in the universe giving me my first lesson that you need to listen to people and stop letting your ego get in the way. Cause all my ego was saying was, but wait, I want to be in charge of all these people. Like I've been in charge of all these people. How do I just teach and not be in charge of these people? You want that person to do my job? What? But you know, to make a longer story longer, she wanted me to be a presenter. She's like, you're the perfect cast to put with this guy and go on the road and do urban rebounding. It's a completely in your wheelhouse. Like I need you out on the road. So she gave me beyond Body Pump, my first opportunity to do not pre-choreographed, but be a presenter and create certifications, go. And I started presenting at IDEA, ECA, all the big shows. And again, I was so young. I had no idea that this was a big deal. like people worked their whole life to do it. It just kind of not fell on my lap, but someone else like anointed me, this person. So that was my first like step into the presenting world and the program development world. Super fun videos, the whole nine yards. And it was at a show that Schwinn saw me, and they were out actively scouting because they wanted to start a new strength training program. So I got flown to Denver to meet with the Schwinn team, along with John Giswold, Lisa Wheeler, and John Gary, who, look them up if you don't know them and you're listening to the podcast. They are like the big kahunas back in the late 90s, early 2000s. And again, here I am, this, you know, 20-something girl going, why am I here? Like, I have no idea what I'm doing. But I got hired by Schwinn. We created a first of its kind strength training program with a new product. I'll fast forward. So the shows, everything, but I was in charge of, eventually in charge of the master trainers, building that side of the program, doing both the ops, the education, the programming, the recruiting, all of it. It was my first foray. And that moved me here to Colorado because we got divorced from spinning somewhere along the way. So now it wasn't just this strength training program, but we had to create a new cycling program. Created the new cycling program, ended up working for Schwinn full-time. That's when I met Jay Blahnik. So two really pivotal people for me at Schwinn. Tracy Harvey, again, another mentor that saw in me, you're really good at leading other people, developing other trainers, developing programming, being behind the scenes. I want you to do this full time. And my ego saying, wait, I'm still really young. I like doing this stuff. I'm not done doing the in front of the scenes work. And we joke around it now. We're still friends 20 years later. That's all I do is behind the scenes. And it totally jazzes me. But you know, at such a young age, I had no idea. And then Jay was the other really pivotal mentor for me that started teaching me how to be a contractor or a consultant and lather, rinse, repeat the skill set that I had in multiple projects and create a full-time salary without needing to be employed. So that was a cool unlock. And literally the rest is history. I could tell you, I mean, I could spend 40 minutes talking about all the adventures he took me on, but one of the biggest ones was bringing me over to BOSU and working for BOSU in program development, master trainer development, helping run the business side of the master trainer piece. He also gave me a lead into working with Shalene Johnson back when she ran Powder Blue, and then we sold to Beachbody and a whole host of other things. So that was, you know, my group fitness career. I was also still personal training, running gyms, selling gym memberships. And my husband and I created a software, Group X Pro, and eventually sold that to Daxco. So that's a whole nother aside that your people may use, but they probably don't care about how that all came to be. But it's an important part of my story because I think this is a good thing to talk about too. I always knew that being a group fitness instructor forever was not viable. Not that that's a, sometimes when I say that to Group X instructors, they're like, but wait, I'm going to teach until I'm 80. I'm like, you very well may be, but I hope you're not doing it because you have to when you're 80. Like, there are other transferable skills and adjacent things you can do and still be and impact the group fitness world without having to trade time for money as an instructor, because you can only do that for so long. And even when you're at your heyday, I think I was teaching 17 classes a week. You still can't make a living teaching 17 classes a week. It doesn't work even now, right? So I'll stop there because there's a lot more, but then it took these weird turns into franchising and program development. And that's like the back half of my old lady career. So I'll stop.
No, I love it. And that's why I think you're so interesting to someone like me. I want to speak for every person who listens to this podcast, but just among the people in my immediate circle and people that I know very well on a day-to-day basis, most instructors are not interested in the unsexy non-teaching stuff. And I have a supply chain background from retail. And in the same vein, everyone wanted to do merchandising when I went to school. And I was like, let's go to the factories in China. Because I love also being behind the scenes and understanding how things and products and services come to life. So I respect that so much about you. And I definitely think it has helped me become a better instructor to have more of a holistic view, you know, kind of stepping back as a fitness professional and understanding that there are opportunities opportunities beyond the studio, beyond the room. Maybe not every opportunity is right for you or viable for you, but it's interesting to understand what's out there and what a future in this business in one of those opportunities looks like. So I'd love for you to talk a little bit about the mentorship aspect. And I wonder if that relates to feedback. That's something that we talk about a lot here. Two points I want to ask you about. First, I couldn't agree more about the mentor aspect. Unfortunately, I believe, though, my personal experience and some of the people who have been listening, maybe a mentor is not readily available to them, and or they don't have the experience, for example, that you did, where somebody is sort of saying, you know, I see this skill set in you, but instead this one. But perhaps they're getting feedback in some form where some of that information or messaging may be buried in there that they can kind of unpack on their own. So I'd love to ask you, what does a Fit Pro do in trying to seek out mentors, how to unpack feedback that they're given? As somebody who has trained a lot of people on how to do this work, I think delivering feedback can be so subjective and objective, but I do believe we need a little bit of both. Give us a little bit of insight on all of those things. What do you think?
Yeah, I'll try. I hear you. It's much harder now. I think back again, like I was saying earlier, different time. Back in my day, every club had a need to mentor people. There were no organizations out there spitting out group fitness instructors. But the first thing that I would, you know, tell your listeners, if you want, like, mentorship can be formal. It can be on the job. Like, and by formal, I mean, you can find people that will pay you and, or that you can pay that can mentor or coach you and help you explore what the options are. And sometimes I don't think that group fitness instructors understand, know, or have access to that track, or they might also look at it a little bit, be a little suspect to it because, well, wait, isn't mentorship supposed to be someone just sees me and goes, oh, I think you're great, let me help you out. And it just doesn't happen that way anymore. So don't turn your nose up. If you really are seeking to grow in this profession, whether it is staying in your lane and being a group fitness instructor and how can I do more, be more here, impact more here, seek out business coaches. And by business coach, I mean coaches in the fitness space. Then there's on-the-job mentoring. Be looking for that when you're looking for employment. Ask that during your interview. And I've been talking a lot the last 2 years about taking control of your career. And the biggest thing you have to do is realize that you have to know very much your why. Why am I doing this? Why am I in this profession? Who do I want to be working with? Like the end customer, the member. And what do I want to be providing for them? And then you've got to go find opportunities that work in there. So you're interviewing people as much as they're interviewing you. And I don't know that the industry has shifted enough where we really feel empowered to make smart choices about where we go and teach. We just want an open slot, especially now that times are hard to come by. So that would be one question I would always ask is, what is the growth opportunity here? And you as my group fitness manager, what role do you play in my personal improvement plan? Because I want one, right? Because those are very hard to come by now in a job. And if you, yeah, I'm not saying that you shouldn't work for someone that doesn't, but be aware so that you're not disappointed that they're not helping you, and then go seek it out, pay for, or the other way, which is informal. So you probably know I run the ACE group fitness page on Facebook. It's a group. It's sponsored by ACE, but you don't have to be an ACE person to do it, but it's like 8,000 people. We provide informal mentoring every single day. Now, it's not a two-way street because we can't have 8,000 people sending us stuff in and providing feedback, but we're digging into, you know, mentorship is about exposing you to different ideas, exposing you to different think tracks. And that's what we do every day. We talk about lots of different stuff in the fitness industry. So if you're proactively in that group, you know, consuming the information, you are getting mentored just from afar. So now I can go into what you do. If you're using informal mentorship like that, then the next thing you do, if you really just want mentoring, you don't want to pay for coaching, like a specific coaching program, is you start reaching out to these people. And there's a way to do it and a way not to do it. I'll start with how not to do it. You don't end up on the page going, oh yeah, that's Shannon. She'd be a great mentor. I'm going to DM her and ask her if I can pick her brain and ask her 17 million questions. You start by getting noticed by the person that you want to mentor you. And then you start to make the connection by reaching out and talking about the value they've already brought to your life. Because there's a difference in someone reaching out to me and going, I know who you are and what you've done. You'd be a great person to ask advice from. That's one version of reaching out. Or people that I do mentor that have reached out and been like, hey, here are the three things that I've learned from you in the last 6 months on the ACE page or through podcasts or whatever that have positively impacted my life. Thank you so much. I'd love to learn more from you. Leave it at that. I'm answering that email, right? Because I can see that you've already done your homework and you've already been intentionally seeking me out and learning from me from afar. So we're going to have a different rapport than this group, right? And you've got to trust that people that are being sought out to mentor them are getting, I shouldn't say hounded, that's a horrible word, but we're inundated with those kind of things. And if I allowed every single person in the world to pick my brain, I would have no brains left. So it's got to start somewhere. So you start talking to them. And then when you're ready to be mentored by someone, have specific questions. Because like, I will talk to you all day long about my path and share my wisdom because it's going out to a bunch of people. But if I'm talking to one person, me getting on the phone with them and repeating my story from start to finish, A, I've told it so many times, you can go listen to it. But B, like, how can I help you? What do you know about me that you know I can help you with? So you've got to be specific with these mentors these days. It's going to be few and far between that you're going to find what I did, which were three people that saw in me things that they're like, I am going to develop this in you because I need this and you're going to be really good at this. Those just are very hard to come by. So this other path I think could be extremely helpful. I hope that answered your question.
It did. I just want to follow up with what advice do you have as somebody who's given a lot of feedback on different people's careers, FitPros mm-hmm. specifically, on how FitPros can take the advice in, what should they parse, what should they absorb? I think for me personally, it's sometimes challenging to take feedback in a way that I can apply it when it comes from somebody who is not teaching classes. I think that they have a valuable point of view, maybe as an owner or a manager for sure. And so I welcome and hear that feedback. But for me specifically, what resonates more is when I have another FitPro or somebody who is out there teaching classes, giving me that feedback, because I feel like they can see it through different eyes. I don't discount feedback from anyone, like I said, who maybe is not a FitPro. But I think for a lot of us, it just makes it easier to absorb as if somebody's speaking our language directly. So what advice do you have on how FitPros are hearing feedback right now? Times are tough. And we'll get into COVID and all of those things. I think that for me personally, I'm hearing feedback a little bit differently now that I've been through COVID and teaching the lows and the highs since. But I still wonder, what should I do with this information and how can I make it work for me?
I'm going to try. It's a tough question because there's lots of different feedback. And I'm actually going to push back on you just a smidge. I think one of the greatest learnings for me in the last 10 years is that feedback from people that don't do what I do is actually more valuable than feedback from people who do what I do.
I think I'm learning that, which is why I sort of said, it's not that I discount it. I'm just learning to really listen to it in the same way and with the same intent that I do a fellow FitPro.
Yeah. Here's something that I think can help that. First, it goes back to what I said earlier. You've got to know why you're teaching. And when you know why you're teaching, you'll have a better idea of what feedback you need to facilitate your way. And when you do, then you know what feedback to seek. Because I think it's less about who's giving us the feedback and if the feedback is something we think we need to learn. Let me give an example. When I was teaching, because I think all of you that still ask me for mentorship would be very surprised to learn that I literally haven't put on a microphone in a gym in 10 years and taught classes. But I can still give you some really good advice about what to do and what not to do, even though the industry has far surpassed my ability to teach at all. Like I would die. My local F45 tried to get me to teach for a month while someone was out of town. And like, I thought about it for a hot second and then I vomited because I'm like, I don't think I can do this anymore. And I taught a good class. Let me back up. But when I was teaching, my why was access for fitness. I believe that everyone should have access to fitness. And I deeply wanted to get more people moving. That's it. And so when I knew my why, I knew where to go to do that thing. And so I was open to the feedback from less from my FitPros, because FitPros tend to give you the X's and O's of executing a game plan. Well, you could do this with your voice and you could do this with your choreography. And that was a little sticky transition and you didn't hit the top of the phrase and da 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 da. And we can become so consumed with the X's and O's of teaching that we forget. And again, like if that's your why, if like teaching is a sport to you and your why is I just want to get better at teaching, then feedback from Fit Pros, 100. But if I looked at my why and I was like, I really just want to get more people moving, then all of a sudden Fit Pros advice, I mean, it was good, but a manager, a new member, even people that would not take my classes, their feedback became more valuable because they had the unlock for what I was trying to do. Does that make sense? And that's why I think I don't discount Fit Pros advice either, but at some point you can only, like, being a better teacher, like the X's and O's of teaching can only go so far if your why is I truly want to build my classes because I have a desire to get more people moving. That becomes a behavior change, a communications thing. It becomes a marketing thing. It becomes a concierge. Like, I mean, I actually challenge most group fitness instructors to think about the skill that we need to develop most is realizing that we are in the service industry. We're not actually in the fitness industry. Our vehicle's fitness. But my job, like, to build bigger classes is not actually predicated by me doing a kick-ass step combination. It is by being like the best hostess of a party ever with some music in the background. So I hope that makes sense, but it's, you just got to know what feedback you're looking for, and there's room for all of it. And you need to have people in, I call it my curio cabinet. I've got my curio cabinet of, or, you know, even like a president's cabinet, I've got my cabinet, and they all give me different feedback along lots of spectrums to help me grow.
So well said. I think the aligning it with the why is a great piece of advice that I think we often forget about, because you're right. We get caught in the minutia of it. You want to hear, how was that choreography? How was that pattern making? Wasn't it amazing? Like, that's what you want to hear from Fit Pro to Fit Pro, but that's not exactly what may be in line with your true why, which I think is so important to help us step back. So thank you for making that point. Wonderful. Something I really am dying to ask you about, and I want you to talk about it as much as you want to, because we have yet to discuss it on the podcast, but I'm starting to see it more and more as things are coming back. And you tell me if you believe we should talk about COVID first, and then we'll get to this, or the opposite, whatever you prefer. I know something that you've spoken about is that you believe that the key to success in fitness is having a cooperative and collaborative mindset, especially within instructors. Maybe not so much competing and comparing ourselves to one another, but instead working together to bring fitness to the people, right? Bring fitness to the masses. I agree with that, but I think in practical, everyday Fit Pro life, the system is designed to put us in competition, right? We're getting paid depending on how many people are in those bikes, in those classes, in those rowers. I teach a few different formats. It's all the same, right? The more people you have in your class, the more money you make. If somebody else has more people in their class, maybe those are people that could have been in your class. The scarcity mentality, I think, has plagued our industry way before COVID, but since, it has gotten infinitely worse, I think, because now we're not only competing with scarcity with each other, but now the treadmill in the basement, the Peloton, all these other things that people now have access to. I believe that my why is also similar to yours, and that I want to make fitness for everybody, fitness accessible. That is part of my why. And so that's in direct discourse with how the system is set up and competing with one another, because then I'm not accomplishing the ultimate goal of bringing fitness to as many people as possible. Give us a little bit of advice on why it's not a competition, even though we're paid that way, how we can overcome feeling that way. Something I know that for me specifically, that I've shared with others because of my previous retail experience. And I honestly think just because I'm older, I know what I bring to the table as an instructor, and I know what I don't, and I know what I'm not great at, and that things that I need to work on. And so for me, I don't necessarily see it as competing, but of course it affects my bottom line because more people are in somebody else's class versus mine. So I want to talk a little bit about that, because even when you feel confident in what you bring, it still creeps in and affects us a little bit. So I would love to hear your advice for all of us on how we can deal with it.
It's complicated. So isn't everything? Where to begin? If I could wave a magic wand, our entire industry would change its business model. Because you're right, and I've spoken about this so much to group fitness managers and owners of clubs, like, you are measuring the very thing that is putting your internal staff in competition with each other, measuring numbers. And the more you measure numbers, the people will become cooperative, but they're not a team. And that's challenging. It's not changing anytime soon, unfortunately, because most club operators are just hanging on by a thread. And when you're hanging on by a thread, it's really hard to change your business model. Like you're not going to experiment when you're barely getting by. So let's move that away. I do think there are two books that I would suggest people read to get, because it's a mindset shift first, because I still think you can pack your classes and not have to be in competition with other people. And there's a philosophical component to that, and there's a practical component to that. So philosophically, the two books, The Gap and the Game and The Go-Giver, which I'm only halfway into, but some of the things you said, I was just like, oh my gosh, yes, this book makes so much sense in this. So let me start with The Go-Giver. One of the secrets to my success, and one of the secrets they talk about in this book, is being a giver pays you back in spades. And people are very reluctant to give when they feel like they have to take to win, whether that's in sales or in our classes, right? When was the last time that you, without an ulterior motive, suggested a member do someone else's class that might make them choose their class over yours, encourage them to readily welcome and enjoy a sub instead of just setting them up to miss you, or even invited them to go home and use their Peloton instead of coming to your class, if that made more sense? And you may have done it, but when I say ulterior motive, like there's something in the back of your head that said, okay, I should say this because this is complimentary, or I should set my sub up because then she won't sub for me if she doesn't have a good experience, or I know this person's feeling bad, so I'm going to let them off the hook by Peloton. Like, when did you last genuinely, because if I want to get people moving and make fitness accessible, I don't care if it's with me. Like, my why is fitness, not fitness with Shannon, but fitness in general. So one of the secrets to me building my classes was at the beginning of every class, I'd say, look, here's the title of the class. Here's the actual description and what that means. You may have stumbled in here. You may have taken this a million times. I'm going to turn around and you have permission to leave, because if this would be a better solution for you today, there are treadmills out there. There's another class starting in the next studio. There's this. You can even go outside and walk. I don't care. My goal or my hope and wish for you is that you find something that works for you today. And if it's not me, like, don't stay in here because you feel obligated. And the collective feedback that I got from members from that was like, wow, even giving me the permission to leave made me want to stay more. Because I trusted that you cared about me and my fitness and my wellness, not just about me being your member. Because how many times have we said that to somebody, right? But those are my members. My members don't want the class to change to 9:15. They're not your members. They're the gym's members. They may be your class participants. And I get it. There are so many statistics that say members stay for the instructor, 60% are coming back. I get it. Like, we hold a lot of power. But this whole go-giver mentality is, that was a very giving thing to say, right? Like, I do want you in my class. My ego wants you in my class. I know I can take care of you. I know this is a great class because this is what I do for you in this format. But if this isn't working for you today, great. So how did that pay forward? One, they feel a lot more trust with me to allow them to do that. But then how do you build your classes? It's by getting new people to take your classes. What's the story that those members are going to go tell fitness reluctant people that they might not have told before? And that's why we're not getting to 85%. Like, it's not our formats and it's not our know-how. It's the spirit and the energy of group fitness or fitness in general. So I was spreading this energy of, she actually will take care of you. So I was able to get new people to come into the club because these members were saying, and we've always said that to instructors, right? Like, your job is to get people to bring people. But my approach was from a giving place, not just trying to turn them into my super fans so that they would recruit more people. I'm going to pause and say, does that part make sense first?
Yes, it absolutely does.
Cool. And it's so counterintuitive because it's like, you're really going to tell them to go take another class that's starting in 15 minutes? I'm like, yeah. You're not hostage. If you don't feel like doing ballet today, don't do my class. Or, right, this is my cycling class today and there are 27 sprints in it. And if you're hungover, this is not good for you. Go walk on the treadmill or go home or go get a smoothie and lay down in the locker room, right? Like, let me take care of you as a person because that was my why. Now, I mean, that's the other thing, is you have to really do an ego check and make sure. Not that there's anything wrong with it. There are a lot of people that are in fitness that do it for the ego. I want to do it because I want big classes. I want to do it because I want people to tell me I do a good job and that I made a difference in their life. And there's nothing wrong with that, but you just have to know your why, right? So that's the first, the go-giver. The other one, The Gap and the Game, is that's more for clubs and management. But I don't know. The numbers game is out the window right now. And again, I'll say we can't really fix that. And if your paycheck depends on you getting more people in, you can use this go-giver concept to build your classes. I'll give you practical advice there too, but giving will actually build your classes indirectly. It may be a long game. We're not microwaving clients, we're crock-potting them. But this gap and gain thing, like this whole punitive, I mean, I know it sounds like a carrot that people are dangling in front of us, build your class and I'll give you more money. I'm like, that's actually your job. So anyway, I can comment, hire better. I'm doing my job. You do your job. Get some more people in here.
Shannon dropping facts right now. Yes. Yes.
That's a collaboration too. And that drives me crazy.
Yeah.
I do appreciate that some clubs are making it where you can make more money, but the ones that are doing that are actually paying a better base wage than the general club anyway, that's also being they're being punitive about numbers. And what I mean by punitive is, if you have so many weeks that your numbers are under some arbitrary, stupid number, I'm going to cut your class. Like, okay, well now let me panic. And when I panic, I'm working from the gap. I'm not working from the gain. And, you know, I've preached a long time and I don't know what the metrics quite are right now. I would just suggest that managers and owners really think before you go back to pre-COVID metrics, because you don't have any stats to go on that what you're indexing towards is actually achievable within the instructor's control, or that they're going to do the right thing to get those numbers. Because I go back to all those things, if I'm trying to get you to have numbers and numbers just aren't coming back because it's post-COVID, and that's just the nature of where you live and the political climate you're in and the age of the population and the types of classes and your COVID protocols, whatever, you're going to start doing stupid things to get numbers if you're afraid that your class is going to go away because you don't have numbers. You're going to lie. You're going to compete against other instructors. You're going to make your subs life hell, and you're going to sub out your classes and pick the worst sub so that the people miss you when you come back. And the worst thing that you're going to do, we keep talking about trying to gain this 85%. If you are just looking at numbers, every instructor is trying to be the hardest damn instructor in the room. And when you're trying to be the hardest damn instructor in the room, you're never going to get the other 85%. Like, you're not giving instructors permission to be genuinely who they are if they're in competition over numbers. I hope that makes sense. And I know a lot of managers are like, yeah, but if I watch Peloton, like, they've got that cast of characters. Yeah, but they've got millions and millions and millions of people. They're fine. You don't. So we need to, we're not doing that. So those are the philosophical things. And you mentioned it, like, it's switching from this scarcity mindset to abundance. And I know abundance isn't sexy because you're like, it's truly not abundance because you're stuck in a trap that isn't attracting abundance in members either for a variety of reasons, because their business model is broken. So let's look at practical. I do believe that instructors and trainers have to take a little bit more control over building their classes from a true networking and sales perspective. So funny enough, and this is my evidence that that is true. I love Zumba so much, cannot teach it, never will teach it because I was like an asshole trying to shake my hips like that. But I love what they've been able to do in this industry. It is head and shoulders above anything else that we've done. They are, talk about, I mean, you and I are on the same page, like access. They are giving people access to fitness that we will never touch at a traditional health club, which is just amazing. But they've engaged me for the last 6 months on doing a business course for all of their instructors, both on the Zen side and the Strong Nation side, because they believe the same thing. Like, not only do people need business skills if they're going out and launching an online business or a hybrid business or striking out on their own, but they need to understand business skills so they can do self-promotion, not just inside the club, which is what we were just talking about, but self-promotion outside of the club that helps bring people into the club and into their classes if they're still working in that traditional environment. So that's things like direct outreach and networking, having a list of people that could be potential class participants or people that could potentially get you in front of class participants, and deepening your relationships with them intentionally. And that takes some time and some forethought. It's phone calls, it's text messages, it's emails. And I mean, there's a lot more to this than what I'm saying surface, so don't poo-poo it quite yet. But there's a outreach model. And then there's ensuring that you have ways that people can learn about you and you can build trust and credibility outside of the club. Because we also need to remember that part of the reason why we have a hard time attracting new people is we are still scary as all get out. And I know you're sweet and down to earth and you're super relatable, but it's not you. It's the thought of coming and parking at a health club and walking through the door and then walking through your class. Like there are literally three physical barriers before they get to you. So you can be as lovely as possible, but if they're too scared, and I know the gym should be doing more to break down those barriers, but if the ultimate outcome is you want them in your class, then I need to go out into the public and break down the barriers for them by maybe having your own website where they can take a quick little 15-minute tutorial with you for free, or a tip sheet, or a welcome video that explains how to set up a bike and come in and you can even bypass me and not talk to me, but here's how you do it. So many things we can talk about with regards to breaking down those barriers, but we've got to start taking control of that situation, because the way that clubs do it isn't necessarily breaking down the barriers to get them into group fitness. It's breaking down the barriers to get them to say yes to a trial membership. And then we know there's a whole another set of things that has to happen. So direct outreach, the trials, or I'm sorry, the building trust and credibility piece, and then referrals. So figuring out a way to help facilitate referrals, both professional referrals, and I'm not talking about like with the OBGYN, I mean, with your other instructors, and how can we all work together and paint this picture of we've got you covered, and then former and current clients or people that are in your classes as well. And truly, like you said, you know what you do right, what you do wrong. I don't want instructors even to think like that. Like, I don't want you to think that you don't do anything wrong. You just do, again, gap and gain. This is my new mentality these days. You do everything you do perfectly well. And that is a radio station that attracts people. And this goes back to the feedback question. I'm probably going to tell you, like, there's not a lot you need to work on, because you are you and you are going to attract people. And what I want you to work on are all the soft skills that draw more people to your radio station and become aware of you so they can find their home. They need to find their radio station. So, you know, less concerned about finding the top of the phrase, more concerned about EQ skills and doing self-promotion that allows people to see you, get to know you and feel comfortable with you. So they'll come in and try it. And then you can make them convert them, let them be a believer. So it's just a little bit, I mean, I know it's not the perfect answer, but it's a start.
A wonderful answer. There's so many little nuggets in there. I think creating your own brand as an instructor is so important. We were talking about that earlier today, just with a couple of clients and some instructors at F45 this morning. So it's funny enough that you bring it up. And one of the things we talked about is the resistance of some instructors seeing themselves as brands. While I do agree with you that practically, and Christina Giroux has emphasized that on this podcast before, as a studio owner, she bears the responsibility of bringing people in through that door, but their responsibility is not solely hers. And that is my personal opinion. If I want you in my class, I'm going to make sure I do everything I can to get you in my class. And that begins with my social media and my brand. I've had a lot of time perfecting that and understanding that and testing that out as a founding instructor at 6 different studios, different modalities. I've literally learned the hard way as I went along and then slowly been like, okay, well, this works, that works. I'm keeping this. I'm not going to do that again. You know, just trial and error and time. 2-part question. What makes a great instructor, in your opinion, regardless of modality? What are those key pillars that really make you stand out? And once you identify those as they relate to you, how does an instructor create their brand outside of social media? Because I believe that social media should be an extension of what you're providing in the room. For me, I always tell people what you see on social media is what you'll get in the room. And what you get in the room is a mirror or something similar what you'll see on social media. Because I think for me as a consumer, and sometimes as a fellow fit pro, I sometimes am shocked when I meet someone in person because it's so far from what their social media presence is. And I find that shocking. So please help us figure out what makes a great instructor and how we can use those pillars to develop our own personal brands as fitness professionals.
Yeah. And I'll start by echoing what you said. I do believe clubs have the responsibility to get people in the door, but instructors do as well. I think here's the rub before I go into it. I'm not okay with you get it and you do it because you're a go-getter and you have a deep why and connection to this work, and you'd probably do it even if you weren't getting paid. I think sometimes clubs have the expectation that you're trying to bring people into the club, but there is no compensation for you doing that. There is an indirect compensation for it, but that's not actually 100% legal. But we'll leave that for a different discussion. So I think clubs need to come to the table and be like, all right, this is how many hours I'm paying you each week for the marketing side of your job, whether you build your classes and get the direct compensation bump from it or not, because you bringing people into the club I love that you do. And they may not like your class, or your class may not be convenient. There are 10 million reasons why someone might not take your class that have nothing to do with anything inside your control. I'll move that over there. Leader for cocktails. What sets you apart? I mean, this is really interesting. And, you know, I've done a lot of work for ACE. I believe in education. I believe in certification. I believe in the tactical, practical skills of group fitness. Now that's out of the way. I believe the tactical, practical skills of being a group fitness instructor are about this much of what makes someone want to come to your class and stay in your class. And so I think your understanding of and respect of the fact that the person in your class is the expert of themselves is the best thing you could just put on a mirror and remind yourself of every day. And that's very counterintuitive to what we're taught in certification and education, and very counterintuitive to where the industry has been, which is, I am the wise woman on the mountaintop. I've got all the answers. You come to my class, I'll take care of you. Where the consumer of today doesn't need the wise woman on the mountaintop. Most of them don't. That's unfair. Some people do. But the people that we're still trying to attract that would allow us to believe in this abundance mindset, the people we haven't tapped into yet, they really just want a Sherpa walking beside them. They just need a pool deck supervisor. And they need someone that is bright and warm and friendly and inviting, that believes that they have all of the skills and tools inside of them to do whatever they want. Your job is just to dust it off and shine it up and make it better. That's one. And that comes with a lot of knowledge about behavior change and a lot of knowledge about motivational interviewing and all of the, like, the EQ stuff that's wrapped up in, you're just a really good human leader at the front of the room. The second thing that sets people apart is when the ego can be dropped. And you trust that whether I'm teaching to one person or 100 people, that my job is equally as impactful, because if I change one person's day, they can go change one person's day, who can change one person's day. And that's like the smallest sliver, right? So trusting that your impact ripples far beyond the people in front of you, you would start to look at that one person as a million versus believing that you have to have 100 people to be impactful. I'd say the third thing is trusting that you have all the answers that you need to do the job that I just mentioned, and understanding that you know very little and there's still so much more to learn. And that's not just about like, hey, I've got a lot to learn, I'm going to go back and get my CECs, but just becoming a very, you know, people say lifelong learner, I'm going to change around, becoming very curious about the industry that you're in, the community that you're serving, and the needs of the people in front of you. This goes back to feedback, like opening yourself up to finding different lanes of feedback to become better at what you do. And I know that's not at all what you thought I was going to say, but yeah, I mean, there's all kinds of great things I could talk about with teaching and training, but I do believe those are the three that are the most important to make you stand apart and truly caring about the people in front of you. Caring about them, not in a weird mom way, but in a Sherpa way, right? Like, I'm just here to support you on your journey. And then you're going to fly home after summiting Everest and you're going to remember me and we're going to have a picture, but I'm just a part of your journey. You're on your own journey.
Right. I think that's so well said though. I love the expert of themselves. I think that's hard. That goes back to the ego, right? And everything that you're taught is, this is what we're doing and why we're doing it, and you got to do it. And I think that that goes back to your original point of, that's why fitness has felt for so long like a scary and intimidating place to so many people, because we're not really acknowledging that the people coming in know what's best for them. And we're just there to, so I always say, we're just there to provide the options. And more importantly, the one thing I say, a personal note to everyone, regardless of what modality or class I'm teaching, I just tell them, the last thing I leave them with, please have some fun. Enjoy yourself.
Yeah. And let me take what you said. And I'm so sorry to jump in. I just got really excited about what you said. And yeah. I love that you say, I'm just here to provide you the options. I'm going to make a slight tweak for the year 2022. I am here to provide the space for you to move your body. And I'm going to hold the space for you to experiment. And that's really different, because even taking on the responsibility for providing the options that meet all of the needs in the room is, it's not an egotistical thing to say, that sounds weird, but it's a heavy spot to put yourself in. Like, that's a big burden. And this is, like you were talking about COVID, and now, you know, we may be competing with the Pelotons, et cetera. Like, the reason why digital works is they're doing exactly what I just said. They're providing the space right? Providing the container within which to exercise and move their body. And they're holding the space for people to experiment. And the cool thing is the instructor is abstract. And so there is no judgment. Because even if you're providing options, you still are a judger in their eyes, even if you're the best person in the world. So if we flip this script and say, like, my job literally is just to hold the space for you, this container, offer you some ideas. And because here's what drives me crazy when I hear instructors saying, well, what do you do about talkers in your class? I'm like, let them talk. What do you do if they're not doing what you're doing? Let them do what they're doing. What if they're doing it completely wrong? As long as they're not dying, I don't care. Really? How can I? I'm like, yes, my ego is tied up in, you need to listen to me because I have a microphone on. You need to do what I'm doing because I spent a lot of time programming it and you have to do it my way. My job is to make sure that you execute correctly. People, they get on and off toilets every day with bad form and they are still okay. Like no one's going to die in your 1 hour class. I mean, I shouldn't say that because I have had to do CPR class before, but you get the idea. It's just like, I just have to take myself down a notch. Like my job truly is I am on the timetable from this time to this time. You come in because it's a convenient time. And even more so now, like if they are making the choice to get their ass off of a couch and drive to the gym these days, you guys, that's gold. It used to be gold. It is now like cryptocurrency. They are choosing not to exercise on an app in their basement in their pajamas without brushing their teeth. Like this is huge. So just show up. Just hold the space. Hold the space. Yes. If someone's going to hurt themselves, go take care of that. But literally, who cares? And it's funny, you talk about F45. I love F45 so much. But there was a moment in the beginning where like these trainers had a really hard time with me, but there are just some exercises in that programming that A, I don't agree with, and B, I can't do. And so thank God I have the knowledge that I have to just like change them whenever I want. But it would really stress out these younger trainers. And finally, they found out who I am. So thank God we finally had that conversation because I'm like, you guys just leave me alone. Like you are literally providing the space and the music. I got everything else under control. And I just try to remind myself of that all the time. Like I'd come whether, you know, whether they were hitting the top of the phrase or putting together the perfect playlist or like today more than ever, it's so much less about your knowledge of exercise. Knowledge of exercise is ubiquitous. Nobody needs it. They can get it now. They don't need you. Just because you do it in real life does not make you any more beneficial than an instructor giving them it. The education side of it is not your unique selling proposition. It's all that other stuff. So we have to switch that mindset. So sorry, I totally got on a soapbox right there.
No, I love that. And a couple of things I want to follow up with. Thank you for rephrasing what I said in a better way, because that is how I feel. Even options is still so restrictive. And I think that COVID, and we talked about this in a previous episode with Alicia Miller, a fellow Fit Pro and friend of mine, COVID changed the way that we moderate the room that maybe we did a little bit before, and that maybe we're more strict in people not following the rules or participating in the way that we thought they should be. I teach rhythm riding, and I've been noticing that some of the regulars, people I see all the time, started moving their bikes because maybe they felt they weren't feeling that well, or they were feeling going towards the back. And I actually went up to one of them and I was like, what are you doing? Like, why are you not sitting in your seat in the front? And they were like, I just don't feel my best today. And I don't want to be that person. And I was so offended that after being in my class for so long, she felt that way. Not offended, but it hurt me. Sure. It hurt me to think that she thought that we would judge her or feel that way, because I want to create a space that's literally the exact opposite of that. Mm-hmm. So I started the class by just making an announcement and just saying, I don't give a fuck if you are off rhythm and you want to sit in the front row, sit in the front row. I know what I'm doing. I don't depend on you to be on it. It's not your job to be on it. It's my job to be on it. And you're just supposed to just be here. Yeah. And I, you know, I felt like I had to say it. And I was so surprised to see some regulars feeling that way. And a couple of people after were just, I'm so glad you said that. And I'm like, good. I'm glad that you were able to hear it today, because I think it's so important to just be fucking grateful that people are coming.
Oh my gosh, 100%.
I don't know how else to put it, but teaching different modalities, you know, F45 is only one studio out of 5-6 that I'm teaching at, and one modality. And I'm so grateful, because I feel like the entry to barrier to a lot of fitness was always high, was always difficult, as we said, but now it's even more so. And mm-hmm. if it's not an inviting and warm space for people to find whatever it is that they're looking for, that we can, like you said, sort of help and guide and just be a part of their journey,
then they're not going to come. And I've taught in the beginning of COVID where no one came. No one.
Yeah.
Where
yeah.
it was, you know, one person that was probably related to me who felt bad, or my friends or other instructors. I've taught those rooms where people weren't coming. And so now when people come through that door, I don't care what state you're in. I don't care if you're hungover. I don't care if you're going to give 50%. I'm just glad that you came. And thanks.
Well, yes.
I appreciate it. Yeah, it is a gift.
It's a gift. And you were talking about feedback earlier. One other thing I would suggest is talk to people about their experience during COVID. Instead of being so fearful that you've lost them to digital or lost them to at-home exercise, like, I think it's a great awakening for Fit Pros that the people that were successful with fitness before, right? The people that were avid exercisers, that were committed to a healthy lifestyle, had already pieced together how to do part of it at a club and part of it in other ways, right? And if we look back at the statistics, like the data from IHRSA and all these other organizations, we have not moved the needle on average visits at a health club in years. It has been stuck at 2 to 3. We've been trying to solve the wrong problem. Well, I just need to get them into the gym more, because if I get them into the gym more, then they'll reach their goals. And if they're in the gym more, we're stickier and they won't leave. Where I think we've unlocked this, you know, Pandora's box, where it's like, oh no, it actually doesn't have anything to do with their club visits. It has to do with like their holistic approach to health and wellness. And if health and wellness is a part of their life because it's become sustainable behavior change, not because I reached a goal. Like if I hear that one more time, I'm going to vomit. They don't stay at your gym because they reached their goal. They stay at your gym because they realize that fitness is a way of life, not, you know, on a path to a destination. That's why they stay. And they stay because they also exercise at home. They also run. They also bike. They also take walks with their kids. They also play in a soccer league on Saturday and da 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 da. So it's just, I think it's a really great opportunity for instructors to get curious with those members and say, what did you do during COVID? What did you like about it? What did you not like about it? What could I do differently in the IRL experience that would make this even more beneficial and make you want to take the time to come here because it feels different? We've got to make the experience feel different in the studio. And that isn't, you don't get a check mark just because you're a live human being, right? Those instructors on the digital apps are very compelling. I work out one every day and I still choose to go to F45. There's something about F45 that makes me want to go there, right? To mine in particular. I don't know where I was going with that, but there's a lot to learn instead of fearing about what happened during COVID. And like you said, just treat those members like gold, because if they're there. Now, the other thing I would say though, is you can't double down on what these people that have come back want and need, because that isn't necessarily going to attract the people that haven't yet come back or the people that haven't come to the club yet. So that's what I mean by like, get really curious with a wider group of people. Don't just, oh my God, thank you for coming. What made you come back? And then double down on that, because that's just attracting the people that have already, you know, made the choice to say yes.
Yeah. And I think that's so important. That's amazing advice. I would love to just hear just you wrap up before we go into rapid fire. What were the COVID lessons that you think changed the Fit Pro game? What other advice that you haven't said yet on how we can embrace digital to help us and not push it away as something that is in competition with us? And then we'll go into rapid fire.
Yeah. You know, I hope that Fit Pros took away from COVID that it's not exercise that we need to be pushing. It's moving your body, and moving your body comes in all kinds of shapes and sizes, and they're all equally viable. We are going to be one part of somebody's solution. We can't be the alpha and omega. And I don't mean just me and my classes. I mean, just the group fitness or even the club industry. It's going to take lots of things. And that fitness is like this much of what people discovered during COVID. They got engaged with the conversation around rest and recovery and mental health and sleep. And they dug in real hard on nutrition because they finally had time to cook and think about those kind of things. So, you know, fitness used to be the answer to so many problems. It is now very well known to most people that it is a piece of the solution. So we have to amplify the things we do really, really well and ensure that we understand the part that we play and what we do really well. The second thing I hope that fitness instructors realize is we gained a lot of power during COVID that we need to use for good. And what do I mean by that? I think club owners finally realized that there are a lot of members that come for group fitness. And there are a lot of members that come for people that teach group fitness. And it's time to leverage that, not hold people hostage. It's very different than leveraging. But leveraging, I talked about it earlier, take control of your career. Get really real about your why and evaluate the opportunities based on why and what you want to do versus just saying yes to get back in the game, because there are so many unique and interesting opportunities out there. And then I know you're talking about digital. Digital may not be your thing, just like a format might not be your thing. Like, you kind of have to treat digital as a format instead of turning your nose up at the entire category. Like, I hope most fit pros don't turn their nose up at other formats. Like, that's just counterproductive. Some people like Zumba, some people don't. Some people like rhythm writing, some people only do metric writing, right? There's plenty of options for everyone, but digital is its own beast and it has validity. Do not villainize digital, even if you will never be a part of it. And why do I say that? I'm going to circle back and wrap it up with this. If you really are interested in getting people moving and supporting their health and well-being, then you want whatever it takes for them to be successful. And when you start to villainize a genre, digital, and talk about all the things that are wrong with it and all the things they don't get from it, they don't choose you over digital. They just opt out. Because you may very well have taken the thing that they're like, no, this finally made me exercise. It got me from exercising one day a week because my crazy schedule to five. I started training this format because I can't fight it at the club. When you start villainizing it, they start to question, it's gaslighting to some degree. They start questioning their sanity, but you're the professional and you're telling me that's not right, but I'm liking that. So never mind, I'm backing out. It's kind of the same thing I've always said to personal trainers and instructors about like leading with your certification and trying to like compare yourself to other people's certifications. Like, my mom just goes, wait, I thought you were all certified. Now you're freaking me out. So we can't villainize digital, even if we don't embrace it for our personal professional journey. We have to figure out how to weave it in. That means you need to get curious about it. And I mean, go take the classes, go do the things and look for the good that you can find in them that will support your in-person career and how you can weave it into helping. So, my last example is, if I were teaching now, I would teach my class and still promote all the other things that were happening at the club. Tell them how they can supplement with things outside and the beauty and validity in getting vitamin D and taking a walk with your family that we all discovered during COVID. And I would also talk about popular digital platforms if we didn't have one and say, hey, if you're not able to get recovery and stay for the stretches and yoga's not your thing, like try it on this platform, et cetera. We need to support them holistically. And that just goes back to that abundance mindset. They're not going to ditch you because all of a sudden they're doing yoga on the Peloton app. I promise.
I think that's so well said and a great way to wrap up this amazing conversation. All right, Shannon, let's go into rapid fire. What is your favorite song or artist to teach to or move to or both?
Ooh, my gosh, that's hard. My favorite artist, and this is so embarrassing. My favorite artist is Neil Diamond. I don't necessarily move to him, but I used to always play at my cycling classes. It was like a joke at the clubs that I taught at, because they knew they were always going to hear some random Neil Diamond song. But I do like India Ari for cool downs, inspirational, setting the tune. I don't know. I am like a chameleon when it comes to music. I will move to anything that has a beat.
I love that. Well said. If you could only use one word to describe your teaching style, what would it be?
Cheerleader.
I love it. What's the best smell in the world?
Sweat. No, just kidding. It's really not. It's really not. Lavender.
Same. I love lavender. I would agree. What is the most important personal and business lesson you've learned thus far in your career?
Nothing is an emergency.
Applies to both?
100%. When you attack everything as like an urgent emergency situation, you don't make the best choices.
I would agree.
Everything's figure outable and nothing's an emergency.
I agree. If you could do any other job besides the many that you have done throughout your very impressive career, what would it be?
An anchor on the Today Show or ESPN?
Oh my God, I love the Today Show. I have a Today Show cup and I watch it every day and people make fun of me so badly. Oh my God, we're spirit animals.
Yes.
Same. Same. It's like my dream to just sit at the desk with Hoda and Savannah. Oh my God, the big dream. I don't know if I'd be able to say anything, but I just want to sit there. I feel like you would be great with a teleprompter. Me, not so much, but I would just. What is your favorite way to recover after an intense workout?
Massage or a bath. I have the best bathtub in the world.
Oh, you don't hear that every day. Good for you. What is your favorite movie, musical, or play?
Yeah, Hamilton play. My daughter and I have seen it 5 times. So we have a problem. Movie is Bring It On for obvious reasons. And we'll leave it at that.
I love that movie. Oh, I love it. Well, Shannon, you've inspired many, many, many people along your illustrious career. But who inspires you?
Oh, my daughter.
Oh, her name's Lily, right?
Yeah.
She's so sweet. I see pictures of her on your Instagram. She's so cute. Well, tell people how they can find, connect with you. Nobody from this podcast is going to DM her and say they're going to pick your brain. We've already established that. Don't embarrass me, people. Don't do it. But if they want to learn more about you, how can they do that?
Sure. My website, shannonfable.com. And then on Facebook, Insta, and LinkedIn, I'm S Fable. I'm the only one, S Fable.
Amazing. Well, thank you again so much for this incredible and insightful conversation. If you listened to the episode and you liked it, please make sure you rate it and share it on your socials. Tag Shannon, tag us, and share it with all the Fit Pros in your life. Thank you, Shannon, so much.
Thank you. Appreciate it.